dream about owning a home or a condominium down on the beautiful beaches of Alabama, say Orange Beach, Gulf Shores, or maybe even Fairhope, then let me tell you about First Class Real Estate South Home Group's owner, Celeste Hagler. She has brokers down there in the beautiful beaches of Alabama to help you purchase the home of your dreams and to live where you love in the state of Alabama. You can contact Celeste Hagler at 205-861-5698. Contact Celeste Hagler today to help you live where you love in the state of Alabama. You are about to be locked inside the Stingray Show, and coming up on this edition, we are going to be talking with a Super Bowl champion who won it with the Baltimore Ravens in 2000. He also went to the Pro Bowl in 1997, was the WAC Offensive Player of the Year in 1993, and is currently the head coach in Birmingham, Alabama at UAB. Trent Dilfer will join us on this edition of the Stingray Show to talk about his career at Fresno State, his career in the NFL, and coaching up at UAB right now on this edition of the Stingray Show.
Hi, this is Tim Brando with a reminder. Those of you on Tide 100.9, look out, you're about to feel the buzz of Stingray.
This is Stephen Ray, a.k.a. Stingray, coming to you live from Tuscaloosa, Alabama.
I'm Heath Hopkins. I'm here in DeSoto County, Mississippi, right outside of Memphis, Tennessee.
You know, Mark, I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you feel that responsibility to pay it forward and give some kid a chance coming up in the ranks kind of like Tony did for you?
Why do you think I'm talking to Stingray tonight?
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
No, I mean, look, no.
Hey, Stingray, here's the deal. When you get involved with Texas, it's like getting married to a stripper. And let me explain this. It looks good, kind of sexy on the surface. Yeah, but then you get the baggage, you get the drama, you get all that eventually comes with it. And that's what you get with Texas, and that's what the Big 12 learned.
And Heath, any thoughts on our show moving forward?
Hey, to everyone in Tuscaloosa listening here on Tide 100.9, with the Stingray Show, if you don't like it, you better learn to love it, because it's the best show going today, baby. Woo!
And with that, I want to welcome you inside another edition of the Stingray Show. We have a huge guest on tap for you guys this evening. Like I said off the top of the show, he is a Super Bowl winning quarterback with Baltimore in the year of 2000. He played his college career at Fresno State from 1990 through 1993 and played in 32 games and passed for almost 7,000 yards in college and 51 touchdowns. Please help us welcome to the Stingray Show the current head coach of UAB up in Birmingham, Alabama, Mr. Trent Dilfer. Coach, how are things with you on this summer evening?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show. I've heard a lot of good things about it.
Thank you, Coach. So real quick, I do want to ask you, talk about your coaching experience so far up there at UAB.
Well, it's been disappointing, to be quite honest. You know, I obviously you don't ever want to go into something and not be successful. And I felt like I had a solid plan coming in. I knew there was a lot to learn moving from kind of my NFL world and into the high school world and now into the college football world. I didn't realize the things that you can't control, you know, and I think the first year we understood it was a kind of a rebuild. You know, new people in the building, both players and staff. We felt like after year one, we made some changes, and year two was going to be, felt like we were a bowl team in year two. I think we wildly underachieved. I will take the blame for all of that. And I think with each year has come some learning. And, if you're not growing, you're dying. So, I've grown a lot. The people I've brought in the building have grown a lot, and we're trying to turn this thing around. And again, feel like we've made the appropriate decisions and steps to take it to the next level, but we'll see. That's why we play the games, right? You can prepare all you want. You still got to go play the games and make plays in critical moments and be good coaches during the storms of a game. And we'll see how we handle all those challenges this year.
Coach Dilfer, who was one coach looking back at your career? It could have been someone in Pop Warner. It could have been a college coach. It could have been someone in the NFL, whoever it might be. But who was one coach that really kind of turned you on to coaching, like, you know what, I wouldn't mind doing this one day? Who's one guy that really influenced you? And I'm sure there's more than one.
That's a great question, actually. You know, for years I resisted coaching. I was told my entire career as a player that I should coach. I was offered a ton. I mean, more than 10 coaching jobs while I was playing in the NFL. My last year in the NFL, I was offered a front office job, a positional job, and even an assistant coordinator job in the NFL. And I just vehemently did not want to do it. And it was mainly because I had young girls. My daughters were teenagers at the time, or preteens, and as I was leaving the NFL. And I had only seen a couple coaches with daughters do it well. I had seen most coaches with daughters kind of abandon their families and bow at the throne of football. And I didn't want to be that type of dad. So that's really why I went into TV and spent my 9 years at ESPN, was I didn't want to coach. I kind of ran from coaching. But deep down, there had been a seed planted. And I would say the three people that I really, I'd say four. My stepfather was a coach. So I was the son of a coach. So I saw what he did at the high school level and how many people he impacted. Coach Holmgren was a high school teacher and a high school coach before he became a coach at BYU, then eventually Hall of Fame coach in the NFL. And then Tony Dungy and Clyde Christensen. You know, I played for them for 4 years in Tampa. Everybody knows who Tony is, but Clyde is, you know, he's been a quarterback coach, coordinator in the NFL for years. He coached me first, and unfortunately had to coach this guy named Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and Andrew Luck after me.
Never heard of those guys.
Yeah, it was a real buzzkill for his career, leaving me and having to go to those guys. But what Tony and Clyde taught me was you could be great at what you do, but love people even better than how you coach them. And really care about the person and develop the man and develop good fathers, husbands, and earners, you know, providers. And when I was at ESPN, I really enjoyed my first 5 years. And then the last 4 years, I really didn't love the climate of sports television. I didn't love the agenda-driven part of it. And I kind of felt a call on my heart to do something different. Well, I retired in 2017. Moved my family to Texas, lived on a lake, played golf every day, kind of thought that was the drop the mic moment. And I just really felt like I had no purpose. And, you know, God kind of through the course of a couple of years called me into coaching, is how I feel about it. And I've never looked back, and I don't really want to do anything else. I love the challenges. I love the battles. These last 2 years have been, you know, brutal and just gutted me. From a professional standpoint, but from a purpose standpoint, I've never felt more peace. I've never felt more joy. I love what I do. I love the challenges of college football. I love the people I work with. So that's kind of been the journey. I know I gave you a long-winded answer, but it's a little more complicated than just a coach that inspired me.
So, Coach Dilfer, hold that thought, because we're up against our first break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about your playing career in the early 90s out in Fresno, California. That's on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Stingray Show, Super Bowl champion with the Baltimore Ravens and the current UAB coach Trent Dilfer. We'll return with us right after this. It's college. college football season and what goes well with college football events. And if you have an event coming up and needs catering, let Certified Chef Jamie and the Coker Market do the event for you. Here are just some of the things that Coker Market have to offer for your catering needs. Pulled pork by the pound, chicken tenders by the dozen, smoked wings by the dozen, or a half a slab of ribs or a full slab of ribs. Contact Jamie and the Coker Market today, or better yet, go by there off of County Road 140 and let them help you take the hassle out of the catering needs for your event this upcoming football season. How would you like to live where you love in the state of Alabama? Whether it is your upsizing, downsizing, retiring at the beach, or relocating for your job, then you are going to want to contact Celeste Hagler, owner of First Class Real Estate South Home Group, with brokers in Tuscaloosa, Orange Beach, and Huntsville. They can help you with the buying, selling, and investment needs throughout the state of Alabama. You can contact Celeste at 205-861-5698. Once again, that is 205-861-5698, and schedule a consultation to discuss your real estate goals anywhere across the state of Alabama. For over 100 years, the Bank of Moundville has been a name clients can trust. The Bank of Moundville is more than just a bank. They're your neighbors, your friends, and your community partners. Their unique approach to financial education has always centered around families. They believe that financially strong homes today lay the foundation for a brighter future for tomorrow's generation. You can call them today at 205-371-2227. Once again, that is 371-2227. To schedule an appointment to build your financial security, the Bank of Moundville is a member FDIC and an equal housing lender.
Tide 100.9 traffic.
Exclusive traffic now from the Townsend Nissan Traffic Center. An accident is clearing on southbound 15th Street at Lake Avenue. If you're traveling on eastbound 20, heading from Foster's to McFarland, it's a 7-minute drive. East on McFarland from Coker to Jack Warner Parkway, a 14-minute drive. North on Highway 69 from Old Greensboro Road to Skyland Boulevard, an 8-minute drive. With your Tuscaloosa traffic now, I'm Lisa Pake.
Want to jump into any of the shows? Call Tide 100.9 right now at 205-342-9904.
Will somebody answer that damn phone?
That's 205-342-9904.
And with that, I want to welcome you back inside another edition of the Stingray Show. We are conducting an interview with former Super Bowl champion with the Baltimore Ravens in 2000, Trent Dilfer, who is also the coach up at UAB. Let's continue our interview with him, talking about his career at Fresno State in college, where he passed for over 7,000 yards. So, Coach, let's go back to where it all started for you. You are originally from Santa Cruz, California. Growing up, who were some of your idols that you wanted to mold your game like?
Yeah, it's weird. You know, I grew up in a coastal community in Northern California, kind of the hippie, surfing, skateboarding, kind of everything that people kind of pigeonhole us Northern Californians as. That's kind of what I grew up as, to be quite honest. All my buddies surfed, you know, all the things that you think about when you think about Northern California coastal communities. But I was kind of an outlier because I was the son of a coach. And my stepdad had played at the University of California. He was a fullback. He was a team captain. Had developed a really good high school football program, then went on to be a junior college coach, had turned down some Division I offers to coach because he wanted to watch me grow up. And I was kind of the play all the sports, change in the van, you know, three sports a day. Just love competing. And, you know, it was a really cool upbringing, but it was very different than my friends. I was always kind of set apart in the sense that I didn't do what everybody else was doing. And I got an opportunity to everybody recruited me as a tight end. So my senior year in high school, I was like 6'4", 225, could run really well as a 4'6 guy, was super strong, you know, could get in the squat rack and squat, you know, 450 pounds as a senior in high school. I could bench 300 pounds. Like I was just as the best basketball player. I was a 4 handicap in golf. I threw in the 90s off the bump, ran track just for the meets, and kind of just a total jock, and just loved every piece of it. So everybody recruited me as an athlete, either an outside linebacker or tight end, you know, the Pac-10 schools back then. And I just really wanted to play quarterback, and my stepdad had kind of planted the seed in my head that, hey, you're good enough to turn into a quarterback. Now, I was not a very good high school quarterback. I was a really good athlete playing quarterback. I was the second biggest kid on my team. We didn't play high level football at all. You know, the competition, you'd call it small ball here in Alabama. But I was dominant, and, you know, Fresno State, they came out to watch a quarterback that was number one on their list that I was playing basketball against in our gym. And we had a pretty well-known, pretty historic high school basketball program. And this team was coming in to play us, and he came down from Fresno to watch this other quarterback play just to kind of seal the deal with him. And I went for 44 that night and dunked on him like 6 times. And the coach came in and met me on the floor. He's like, listen, I didn't even know your name until I made a phone call back to the offices. I saw that you're like way down our list of quarterbacks. But after what I saw tonight, I'd love to teach you how to play. Would you like to come on a visit? And I was like, yes, if anybody could have offered me to play quarterback, anybody in America, and I would have gone there. And it happened to be Fresno, and took my official visit that weekend. And I remember walking into Jim Sweeney, who's a famous head coach, who was the head coach at the time. And I said, I'll commit. And he goes, son, you haven't been offered yet. <laughs> You know? So like that's how ignorant I was of the whole thing, but it worked out well. I had a great experience in Fresno. We had a lot of really good players. I left after my junior year as a 6th pick of the draft. So it's just a phenomenal experience in Fresno. In fact, I use, you know, both building the high school program in Tennessee and what we're trying to do here at UAB. I still use a lot of the principles taught to me by Coach Sweeney and Jeff Tedford, who's my offense coordinator back at Fresno. Still use a lot of those same principles.
Coach, you mentioned all the sports you played in high school. What was your second best sport? Just rank the top three. What were you best at 1, 2, and 3?
Basketball is by far my best, not even close. I was pretty, I wouldn't say heavily recruited, like not Alabama, Auburn level, but I was a really good, probably mid-major, two guard, three. When I went to Fresno, they were pretty good at the time, and I ran a lot of the off seasons with them. I'd play, you know, pickup games with them, work with their basketball team. I could always score. It was hard to defend the 2 or the 3 when you're 225 pounds, you know, as a big guy. So I like a post body with 2 or 3 skills.
You are a power guard.
Yeah, I was like a power. That's a good way to say it. I was a power guard. I could have played, you know, I had offers from Santa Clara, St. Mary's at the time, Gonzaga before they were Gonzaga, you know, that type of level player. So I was by far the best basketball player. Golf was probably my second best. You know, I won the league championship. My senior year I came in second. My junior year I won it. So I was a pretty good golfer. And then football is probably my third best just because I was not very skilled. I was athletic and I was physical. I just wasn't very skilled.
What game haunts you the most looking back, whether that's Pop Warner, NFL, whatever? What game haunts you the most? And what game do you look back on the most and smile at?
It's a great question. I think the game that haunting. I mean, you remember every bad play as a quarterback. Right. I threw something like, I don't know, 117 interceptions in the NFL. It might even be higher than that. I still don't look at the back of my football card because it's embarrassing. you have a lot of bad ones, and you remember almost every bad play. The ones that stick out the most, and these might be odd, but our school rival in high school, we had never beat. Our high school had never beat. And my school, my junior year, had put in lights for the first time. We'd always play Saturday mornings, and they put in lights. So we moved to a Friday night lights kind of environment, which was epic. And our rival, they weren't really a rival because they just destroyed us every year. We happened to host them the first game under the lights. It was a big deal. And we got down 21-0, typical game against this team. They're kicking our butts. And then, I really took over in the second half, and running and throwing got us back. And we're down 21-20. We'd score our third touchdown. And I go to the sideline, and the head coach says, "Hey, Trent, you got us here. Do you want to go for the win or the tie?" And I said, "Let's go for the win." And we called a great play. The coach called a great play. My best skill player was wide open in the flat for the 2-point conversion. I absolutely dirted. I just choked my brains out.
Oh.
And dirted it, and we lost. The good news is we ended up beating in my senior year. But anyhow, that I can still remember the play. I can remember where the ball landed. You could walk me back to the high school field, which is now named after my son. And I could show you where that ball landed and where he was, how open he was. I remember a game against the Lions in Tampa where, I was trying to throw a back end line pass at the end of the game to win the game. We'd marched the length of the field, and, the ball literally on a twist, the nose guard twist with the three technique, and he comes across, and I go to release the ball, and it kind of nicks off his finger and gets deflected and goes to the safety for an interception. Everybody thought I just threw it to the safety. And you had to like slow down the film really, really slow to see that, it hit this guy's finger and it had deflected. It was receiver Jacquez Green was wide open in the back of the end zone. I was going to throw it to him. It deflects to the safety, and that one haunts me. And then we had Brett Favre beat on a Sunday night game in Lambeau. And, I never beat Brett up in Lambeau as a Buck. I ended up beating him as a Brown up there, but we were playing him in Lambeau on a Sunday night, big game. This is when we had turned it around. We were a good football team. I want to say it was 98, and we were down, and we go on a 2-minute drive and run pass, I ended up handing off a draw to Allstott. He goes about 30 for a touchdown, and we take the lead with, I think it was 51 seconds. We kick it off. We pin them. Good special teams play. We don't let them really move the ball. There's like 12 seconds. I want to say there's 8 seconds left in the game. They're on the 50-yard line. And we're up 4 or 5. We're up more than a field goal. We're like, there's no way we're losing this game. And this is the famous game where Matt Hasselbeck, who now is one of my best friends and I played with in Seattle, steals the signal from Lovie Smith that we're going to zero blitz them. And Brett gets the line of scrimmage and looks over the sideline, and Matt Hasselbeck tells him, "Hey, zero blitz is coming." And he kind of, with people in his face, off his back foot, about his own 45, launches just this unbelievable rainbow versus zero pressure. And Antonio Freeman in the back of the end zone against, I don't know if it was Lynch or Barber or somebody, covering him with his back to him, goes up and catches it, and he walks off a kind of a Hail Mary type play. And I just remember sitting there going, man, I got Favre'd again. Like it was gutting because we had played so well, and it was such a big rivalry and in the NFC North. And man, that one haunts me. There's plenty of others. I mean, there's so many games that you go to bed at night. I never think about the good ones. Our first state championship game, at Lipscomb when we lost, ended up winning 2 in a row after that to the same, beating the same team. But that first one guts me a lot from my time here at UAB. I mean, the Tulane game, my first year, we have Tulane beat there. We have 12 men on the field, and on the fourth down special teams play that extends the drive, ends up being the winning drive for them. Our quarterback tries to quarterback sneak it on the 1 yard line and tries to go over the top and poke the ball over, which we've never taught one time while we've been here. It's never been talked about to do. He decides to do his own thing, and the ball gets knocked out, and it's a touchback. I lose my temper, goes viral, me yelling at a coach, which I regret. There's just so many things that when you have a journey like mine in football, it's unfortunate, but I'm assuming if you ask Saban the same thing, or if you ask Hugh Freeze the same thing, or Kalen DeBoer or whoever, we don't really remember the good ones because you expect to win every week. You expect to play well. You expect to coach well. You expect your preparation to show up. So when it doesn't, it just absolutely guts you from a professional standpoint. I mean, the nights that you don't sleep as after the game as a player and as a coach are just, you know, they stack up. And, but that's kind of what makes it awesome too. It's like life, you know, you're either in a storm or you're coming out of a storm, and, football is very much the same way.
So coach, we're up against yet another break. And when we come back, we are going to dive into your final game as a Fresno State Bulldog, a bowl game that you actually played on Christmas Day. That's on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Stingray Show.
Your flagship home of Alabama sports. We are a championship school, and school is in session.
He'll go on the toss to Jam. He cuts it back. He's got a first down.
Join us Saturday as the Crimson Tide battle Tennessee on the third Saturday in October. Our coverage begins at 3:30 on your home for Alabama football. Presented by Pearl River Resort in Choctaw, Mississippi. Online at pearlriverresort.com. And Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram. Online at TuscaloosaCDJR.com. And by DCH Regional Medical Center. Online at DCHSystem.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Ferguson of South's Finest Meats, the official sponsor of the Stingray Show, has a message for you.
Everything we do here is fresh and custom made, custom to order. You know, I tell people when they come in, you know, if you don't see what you like, ask somebody. You know, we've got the capability to process it, make it. You know, if you want a different blend of hamburger meat, we'll do your brisket blend. We'll do your chuck blend. We'll do your sirloin blend. You know, we do all that right here. We are a butcher shop. It's what we do. So please don't be afraid to ask if you don't see what you like. We can make you any size patty you want. We can make you any amount you want. You know, people call me and say, well, how many patties come in the box? Well, ma'am, how many would you like in a box? You know, you want 12, we'll put 12. You want 25, we'll put 25.
That's just one of the many things that South's Finest Meats has to offer, the official butcher shop of the Stingray Show. With all of the recent tornado damage and storm activity here in West Alabama, Alpha Insurance and hometown agent Jeff Nee can help you personalize your insurance needs. Remember, the more you protect, the more you save. With a helpful customer service team here to serve you in Alabama and over in Mississippi, you can count on Alpha to provide an insurance plan that provides the protection you need, the convenience you expect, and the service that you deserve. For all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs, call Alpha agent Jeff Nee at 205-758-2577. Once again, 758-2577, or drop by their office on McFarland Boulevard East, Suite 101 in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And remember, Alpha agent Jeff Nee, the more you protect, the more you save.
The best place for your high school football coverage is right here on Tide 100.9 and online on Tide100.9.com.
And with that, I want to welcome you back inside the Stingray Show. Our guest this evening is Trent Dilfer, the current UAB football head coach and former Super Bowl champion of Super Bowl 35 in the year 2000. And let's continue our interview with Coach Trent Dilfer talking about his final game as a Fresno State Bulldog. So, Coach, your final game in college at Fresno State came against Colorado in the Aloha Bowl on Christmas Day. Coach, talk about that experience of playing a college football game on Christmas Day, please.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good story. You know, we got married in college, my wife and I. We have our 32nd anniversary in about a month, and or actually in about 3 weeks. And, So she had gone over there with me, and I get really sick. I got the flu. So I missed the first couple days of practice. I had a high temperature. It was her first time, like, having to take care of a sick husband, and I'm a total baby when I get a fever. Like, I go from 6'4", 240 to about 5'3", 130, little, you know, softy when I get sick. So I'm miserable. I don't want to play. It's humid. So when I do go to practice, I'm sweating, you know, uncontrollably. They're really good. That was the Cordell Stewart team in Colorado that had, I want to say they had 11 dudes playing the league off that team. I mean, they were stacked. Yeah. We knew we were the inferior team, and we knew we were not going to be able to run the football. So Tedford comes to me before the game. He's like, hey, I'm going to throw it every down. We'll throw a draw in here every once in a while, but, you know, we got to go by how you go. And I ended up throwing, you probably have the stats. I think I threw for like 570 yards. And we kept it a game. We just couldn't stop them defensively. I don't know what we lost by, but I do remember one play vividly. You know, I had thrown four interceptions in week two that year against Oregon State. And I had played with a bad shoulder and threw four interceptions. We still ended up winning the game, even though I threw four interceptions. But I was just like, I'm never throwing another interception again. And I didn't. I went the entire season and did not throw an interception. In fact, I held an NCAA record for years on most consecutive passes without an interception. Well, we throw my favorite receiver in college, and I hope my other ones don't ever hear this interview, was a kid named Titus Winans. He actually ended up getting drafted in the second or third round by the Redskins the same year I got drafted. But he runs the skinny post, from on my left from about the 20 yard line, and I ripped one into him, and it's going to be a touchdown. Titus never dropped the ball. Like, he had great hands, great ball skills, was physical, and it was right about his eye line. And he puts his hands up, and I'd throw on it, ripped it so hard that it kind of came off his hands and off his face mask, and it gets intercepted in the back of the end zone. And I wanted so badly to finish the season without throwing an interception, and that one goes off his hands and gets intercepted. But, you know, it is what it is. Again, it's amazing. You know, I can't remember any of the completed passes in that game. I really can't. I think I completed probably 30-something passes and for a ton of yards, and I can't remember one of the completions, but, you know, the demon on my shoulder still remembers the interception.
So, Coach, after your incredible college career of throwing for 7,000 yards and 51 touchdowns, you were picked 6th overall in the first round of the NFL draft. Walk us through that experience of being a first-round draft pick and hearing your name called so early there on the draft night.
Well, it's a dream come true. I mean, how many kids get to live out their dream? You know, I was like every other 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old that sits in the backyard and throws to my imaginary receiver for the Super Bowl winning touchdown, right? Or, you know, watches the draft and goes, that's going to be me one day. I mean, you know, there's tens of thousands of kids that were just like me dreaming. You know, I'm blessed enough to be able to actually live it. And, it was phenomenal. At the time it was a very weird experience because there's this famous clip of Mel Kiper getting into it with Bill Tobin, who's the GM of the Indianapolis Colts, for not picking me and picking Trev Alberts. And, you know, the whole thing was manufactured. You know, when people say things are kind of done ahead of time in sports, they're not necessarily wrong. You know, a lot of the conspiracy theorists in sports are actually right. I was supposed to go number one to the Bengals or three to the Redskins.
Right.
And the night before, I found out I wasn't going one because they're going to go defense with Big Daddy Wilkerson. And then I woke up that morning thinking I was going three to the Redskins. We already looked at houses in Washington. You know, I got to know their coordinator and head coach, North Turner, really well, their GM, Charlie Casserly. Like, we were for sure going to the Redskins.
Right.
And then Norv had a change of heart that morning, ended up choosing Heath Shuler. So the Colts were going to take me at four, and they had taken Marshall Faulk at two. And my agent at the time said, hey, you don't want to play for the Colts. They're a wreck. Like, we're not going to let you play for the Colts. We'll hold out the whole year if they take you, and you'll be the first pick of expansion the next year, the Carolina Panthers. And, you know, at that time you made enough money before the draft through endorsement deals that we had more money than we knew what to do with. So we were like, okay, that's whatever. You know, you're kind of trusting your representation at the time. Now I look back and I'd never make that decision again. I would never do that again. I totally disagree with how we handled it, but that's how we handled it. So that's the whole battle between Mel Kiper and Bill Tobin, which then allowed me to go six to Tampa. So I didn't know much about Tampa. I'd spent a little time with Sam Weish, the head coach, but so it was kind of it was bittersweet. Like, it was awesome to be drafted that early, but the expectation going into that draft was one or three. Right. And you end up going six, and, you know, that's not a huge slide, but it's a slide to a team that you didn't really want to go to at the time. Now, I ended up trying to make the best out of the experience. It was a, you know, like the rest of my career, it was up and down experience in Tampa, but we did do a lot of cool things and took the worst franchise in football and turned it into a perennial winner. So for that, you know, there's a lot of satisfaction in that.
And Coach, you were the first quarterback in Tampa Bay history to go to the Pro Bowl. Talk about that experience, please.
You know, it's nice to have on your resume, but honestly, I don't think I deserved it. You know, it was one of those, we were such a great story. It was the first time in 17 years that Tampa had gone to the playoffs, and people remember these names, Warren Sapp, Derek Brooks, John Lynch, because they're Hall of Famers. Right. You know, Rondé Barber, Hall of Famer. You know, so we had built a team that was really good defensively. And then offensively, it was like, guys, probably you might remember Warwick Dunn. You might remember Mike Allstott. You probably don't remember me. And then you won't remember any of the receivers or tight ends because they were kind of journeyman guys. And we were kind of just a blue collar offense that played, you know, kind of that ground and pound opportunistic offense. My stats weren't very good. But what we did do is we knew how to win. You know, we had learned how to win. We were tough. We beat good teams. You know, we beat really good perennial NFC teams. We beat the Niners in, I think it was week four, kind of shocked the world. That was the Deion Sanders, Steve Young, you know, Terrell Owens, Jerry Rice was still playing. Like, that was a really good team. So I think I kind of made the Pro Bowl because it was such a good story. And I was a winner. It wasn't like I carried the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with my right arm. You know, that, and I never claimed to have done that. You know, that was not my job, to be quite honest with you. My role as a quarterback every time we won was, I think I was the original quote unquote game manager. Like, I really was. Like, that's, I hated that moniker. I hated that because I felt it was a kind of a slanderous term, and I think still many do use it to be slanderous. But I remember working a Monday night game with Steve Young, who became one of my best friends to this day, and, you know, we worked, I think, 6 years on Monday Night Football together, and he's sitting there on the desk, and he's talking about a really good quarterback, and he goes, you know, the thing that pisses me off, this is Steve Young speaking, is that people criticize game management. He goes, I'm sitting here in the Hall of Fame. He goes, I'm not in the Hall of Fame because all these runs I made or these big throws I made to Jerry Rice. I'm in the Hall of Fame and we won Super Bowls because I managed the game. Yeah. He goes, it's 90% of playing quarterback. It's decision making. It's high level, high impact decision making. Yep. And the best ones know how to do it and the bad ones don't know how to do it. And, you know, it was kind of rewarding to hear that next to my colleague and friend who's a Hall of Famer, because I have a lot of satisfaction in being a winner and knowing how to win. And a lot of times you have to put yourself second to know how to win. And, you know, it's been a formula that as I've, you know, coached high school or coached young kids in the Elite 11 or whatever it is, many of them come back that have had these massive statistical careers. But what they're most proud of is the decisions they learned how to make and how to manage a game and take a game that you're not playing very well and still know how to win. Or never letting the other team have a chance to win because of how you handle the clock or handle an audible or handle a situation. And it's kind of like the secret sauce of winning. And I really learned a lot of that 97 year with Tony Dungy.
So, Coach, we're up against our final break. And when we come back, we are going to dive into the remainder of your career in the NFL and coaching. That's on the other side of the break. You're listening to the Stingray Show. We will return with Trent Dilfer right after this. Has it always been your dream to build the pond of your dreams, but you don't know if property you own or thinking about buying has a good location to build a pond on? You need to contact Honey Hole Fisheries right here in Tuscaloosa County, because Jeff Bagwell will help you decide if property you own or are thinking about buying has a good location to build a pond. You can contact Honey Hole Fisheries at 205-799-0192. Once again, that is 799-0192. And hey, Jeff Bagwell can also order top quality automatic fish and hunting feeders for all of your outdoor recreation. Contact Jeff Bagwell today, once again at 205-799-0192, to help you build the pond or lake of your dreams. With all of the recent tornado damage and storm activity here in West Alabama, Alpha Insurance and hometown agent Jeff Nee can help you personalize your insurance needs. Remember, the more you protect, the more you save. With a helpful customer service team here to serve you in Alabama and over in Mississippi, you can count on Alpha to provide an insurance plan that provides the protection you need, the convenience you expect, and the service that you deserve. For all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs, call Alpha agent Jeff Nee at 205-758-2577. Once again, 758-2577, or drop by their office on McFarland Boulevard East, Suite 101 in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And remember, Alpha agent Jeff Nee, the more you protect, the more you save.
You're listening to the home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports. 100.9.
Welcome back inside the final segment of the Stingray Show. Our guest this evening is Trent Dilfer, the current head coach at UAB and former NFL player who was a Pro Bowler in 97 and also a Super Bowl champion in 2000. Let's finish up this interview with Trent talking about him being a game manager and winning the Super Bowl for Baltimore.
Coach, I remember back in your playing days toward the end of your career, I remember so many people on the set on ESPN saying that you just weren't getting a fair shake. It's like, you know, he's won a Super Bowl for Tampa. He's done this. Why aren't they giving him a chance? Why aren't they doing this? Why aren't other teams looking at him to do this or lead them? Do you feel like toward the end of your career, how did you feel about all that?
You know, that is a loaded question, because when in 2000, after we won the Super Bowl and Baltimore didn't re-sign me, and I wasn't cut, I just wasn't re-signed as a free agent. They wanted Brad Johnson, ended up going to Tampa instead of Baltimore. And then Elvis Gerback gets chosen over me, who I did not think was a very good player. And I carried a lot of bitterness. And then I learned really quickly through my faith journey that bitterness only affects the person that's bitter. Like, bitterness is one of the stupidest emotions to have as a human. It's so hard not to, and we all do it, but it doesn't affect anybody you're bitter against in a negative way. It affects you. And it started rotting me from the inside. And I learned real quickly, and God taught me this very clearly, that if I was going to be a good husband and a good father and a good member of society and have an impact on the world for good, that I needed to get rid of that. And whatever happened in my career, I needed to kind of be open armed and receive it and make the best out of whatever circumstance I was in. And salaries and status and all those things didn't matter to me as much after that. Now, I also realized that some of the things that were being said about me were true, and it's hard to hear the truth as an athlete, especially as your skills diminish. You know, now we're talking, I was drafted in 94, now we're talking, it's 2001, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever it was. My skills weren't the same. I had gone through some catastrophic injuries. I kept going through injuries. The second half of my career was littered with injuries. My arm went from being super strong to very average. My athleticism went from being elite to not even good. You know, I wasn't as good a player, not as smarter. I could really understand. I was really a coach playing more than a high level player playing. Right. So I had to receive as truth some of the criticisms. So yeah, people were saying, oh yeah, he deserves a better shot. And maybe I did based on resume, but I also understood that I'm sitting here grooming Alex Smith in 2005 or 6 in San Francisco, and he's more talented than me. Now I'm more accurate. My arm's better. I'm smarter, but like, he can go get out of trouble, like, and he's young and he's going to be really good. Matt Hasselbeck, the time in Seattle, I was better than him early, but then when he figured it out, he was better than me. And you have to receive those things. And then Cleveland, I played really darn good for a while in Cleveland, but then I got hurt again. And once you're hurt, you're not as good. You know, so these things are happening in my career. And then I go to TV where I realize that, you know, a lot of the things an analyst will say on TV, very rarely are they right, but they're kind, but they're kind of right. You know, there's a difference. Like when whoever, I'm not going to call anybody out here, but when your favorite NFL analyst tells you something, he's not right, but he's kind of right. Like he doesn't know what's going on in that build. He doesn't right. know exactly what was taught on that play. But he knows enough that there is some truth in it. And I had to start realizing, both as an analyst and looking back at my career, that there were some real truths in those things. So I look at my 14-year career. I don't think about my career very often. You know, my career ended when I was 35. I'm 53 now. I've had like four careers in life. I've been a professional football player. I've been a high-level analyst. I've been a business owner. And I've been a coach. Right. And I've run the largest camp series in the world. So that's 5. So, you know, I've done a lot of stuff. I've done a lot of stuff poorly and I've done a lot of stuff really good. And I've just kind of learned that, I'm on assignment and the next assignment given to me, I'm going to absolutely put my heart, soul, passion, every part of me into it and try to be the best I could be at it and not get caught up in what other people think. Like, The person that thinks the little about what other people think is me. I just don't worry about it because I can't control it. And if I'm going to teach a building to operate in such a way that other people's words, the things you can't control, should not affect you, then I need to model that first. So when I'm being said I'm a bad coach, I wasn't ready for college football, whatever people say, one, there's probably some truth in it. And two, it cannot affect my approach because I owe my building. I have about 140, 150 people that, you know, I'm responsible for. I need to model to them that you can only invest in the things that you can control. And as soon as you start investing in things you can't control, you're getting beat.
So that concludes our interview with Trent Dilfer right there. I am sorry to announce that yesterday Trent Dilfer was fired as the head coach of UAB. His final record was 9 wins and 21 losses. So good luck to Trent Dilfer, whatever he does after coaching. When we come back on the Tuesday evening edition of the Stingray Show, we're going to dive into week number 7 matchups and begin with LSU and Vanderbilt as Chris Lee of Vandy 247 and then Hunt Palmer of LSU Tiger Nation will join us for a preview of the Tigers and the Commodores this weekend on the Tuesday evening edition of the Stingray Show, and we will see you then.